From KQED Public Radio, this is Capitol Notes, our weekly podcast on all things California politics. And I'm John Myers from KQED, and Anthony York, the editor of Capitol Weekly, is here. Anthony brought a soft drink into the studio today so he would feel refreshed during this podcast. It's been a long week.
It is, but suddenly it doesn't matter now. All the worries of the week have disappeared into this frosty, cold beverage.
We're not going to say what it is because it's like a product endorsement. Then you know this is public radio. We don't do product endorsements.
Right. Unless you pledge and then we'll plug your product and give you a tote bag.
Yeah, that's my line.
Right. Sorry.
So we're sitting here at the end of the week, week ending August 22nd. And I sound like a broken record by saying...
Happy birthday, Virgo? No.
Oh, well, I was going to say no state budget, but yeah, happy birthday, Virgo.
Yeah.
If you're a Virgo out there, call us. No, don't call us. So yeah, we still don't have a state budget. And Anthony, you tell me what you think now that we've done a full week, because this is a strange week. Thank you to all you podcast listeners. We had a podcast on Monday because we had a budget vote over last weekend. And now we're turning around and having another podcast on Friday for Friday. And Anthony, tell me what you think. I don't think we're any closer to the budget. As a matter of fact, I think we're farther away from a budget deal maybe than we were even a week ago.
I think that's exactly right, unless it's wrong. You know, I mean, the way these budget negotiations work, it can seem like, you know, it's always darkest before the dawn. Earlier this week, Mike Vallines, the Assembly Republican leader from Clovis, stormed out of a Big Five meeting, basically saying there was nothing to talk about because nobody had changed their position. So Vallines threw his temper tantrum, or did his John Burton impersonation.
Except he didn't really storm. I was there. You were in the hallway and you left.
I was in the hallway.
And you left.
I had things to do, people to see.
I don't know that he stormed out, but he definitely was frustrated. I think that's fair to say. He's frustrated. He said, all they do is talk about tax increases. I don't want to talk about them.
Well, in our world, that constitutes storming.
Right. I think one of the headlines said stormed out, right. And I thought...
Or stomped. I think it was stomped.
Out.
Stomped.
Yeah, and one of my editors said, did he stomp out?
No, he did. He did the river dance. No.
Michael Flatley. Michael Flatley, Mike Vallines. Anyway, I digress. But no, I mean, he was clearly unhappy that the talk was still tax increases. The Republicans continue to be unhappy about that. So on Wednesday, the governor took what I think is an incredibly unusual step of coming forward with a written compromise budget proposal.
Right. Sort of mockingly referred to around the Capitol as the August revise or the August revision.
Right.
Because the governor traditionally releases a revised budget in May, the second week in May, called the May revision, when he actually gets some hard numbers from tax receipts. But yeah, this I think was unprecedented. I've never seen or heard of a governor making a formal written proposal 2 months into a budget standoff.
And usually it's because a governor will say, well, I'm not negotiating with myself. I put out a proposal. I put it out in May. It's their turn to come to me. But I mean, to me, it was symbolic of just how stuck they are.
And the governor's clearly frustrated. I mean, I think the governor held a press conference yesterday and you could hear the frustration in his voice.
That was Wednesday.
Oh, excuse me. Not yesterday,
right.
But Wednesday. Wink, wink.
Wink, wink, nudge, nudge. We're taping this on Thursday.
Yeah.
By the way, if something happens on Friday, we're going to have to scuttle this podcast.
Oh, well. And the world will cry a tear.
Right. But the governor seemed a little, I don't know if he was frustrated, but he was pointed, I would call it, in the press conference on Wednesday. I mean, let's hear from the governor talking about the need for compromise.
Let's go to the tape.
I keep hammering away to them every time I talk to them that let us get together and let us work this out and don't come to the table with the same stubborn position. You got to be able to be flexible, because that's what happened yesterday when we had the Big Five meeting. You know, the Republicans came in again and said, you know, with the mantra, no taxes, no taxes, no taxes. And then the Democrats came in and said, no cuts, no cuts. So, I mean, you can't continue this way, because otherwise we're going to sit here 6 months from now. And I made it very clear to all of them that this is a year where it is clearly coming out that our budget reform that we have attempted in 2004 with Proposition 57 and 58 does not work, that it was too soft, that we have to make it a tougher budget reform, something that really works, where we're putting together a certain amount of money.
Okay, now I have a couple of things, and then Anthony, I know you've got your own reaction to this, but the first one is, while he, I think, was careful to say Democrats and Republicans are being a problem, I think really the entire event was telegraphed toward Republicans.
Yeah, clearly. I think that's true.
Because I don't think that the Democrats, there's not an issue of them on cuts at this point, although he did talk about some more cutting perhaps than he did in May. But I mean, we're talking about Republicans who keep saying taxes, we're not going to do it, right?
Absolutely. And the Democrats are not just talking cuts, they're talking tax increases. So, I mean, it's not. But I'm going to go ahead and cast my vote for frustration listening to that tape. I mean, yeah. I think the governor is terribly frustrated and sort of at a loss on how to get the parties together. I mean, he clearly, we've talked about this before, does not see eye to eye with the Republicans, does not have any sway, and is not finding many takers for his position of this temporary sales tax increase that will be reversed in 3 years. And so you can make the argument that it's a long-term cut in favor of a short-term tax increase, but Republicans don't seem to be going for it.
But the second part out of those comments, which Anthony and I both looked at each other, if you're listening to this podcast, and went,
right,
is the part where he basically says, well, Prop 58 didn't work. It was too soft.
Shocking.
And lest anyone not remember, Prop 58, which was put on the ballot in 2004, was the first big thing after Arnold Schwarzenegger became governor that he negotiated with Democrats for something that would never let us get in a financial problem again, as I remember the campaign saying, you know, we're never going to be able to get into these problems again. Well, lo and behold, 4 years later, here we are.
Right. And I think at the time when Prop 57, when the bond for Prop 57 was put on the ballot, Prop 58 was sort of a rider. It was considered to be a smokescreen it was the sweetener, as they call it, to get people to support the idea of $15 billion in borrowing. I think a lot of careful capital observers read Prop 58 and said, this isn't going to work, that it's full of holes. And it was considered to be a very weak reform. And that at the time was considered a great victory for the Democrats. And Speaker Herb Wesson at the time, who helped negotiate that deal to get it on the ballot, the idea that the Democrats didn't want a strong budget reform in place, did not want a spending cap, did not want a strong reserve fund, and that this thing was clearly full of holes.
And before we get too far ahead of ourselves in the narrative of what happened this week with this whole discussion, what I'm also struck by in listening to the governor say that, in acknowledging that it was too soft and it didn't work, I mean, that's effectively what he's saying, is the governor called in to a popular talk show in Los Angeles earlier this week, the John and Ken show on KFI, an AM station in L.A. And if you haven't heard the tape, I mean, basically they just, you know, raked him over the coals about a lot of things.
That's probably why he hasn't called into this podcast.
Can he call into the podcast?
Sure.
Let me see. There's a phone. Anyway. But the part that I'm referring to here, they asked him, don't you have some regrets, Governor, about not doing, you know, things that you said you would be able to do and that you wanted to do? And his answer at the time was, no, I don't have any regrets. I just regret that people don't see things the way that I see them.
Can we cue the Frank Sinatra tape? Do we have that queued up?
Regrets?
No, my way. Yeah.
Right. I have a few.
Right.
Or something to that effect.
Yeah.
Right. I don't want to sing it because it's not appropriate on the podcast.
That's another podcast.
But I mean, this sounds like a man who does regret the fact that it doesn't work the way, you know, I mean, this is an acknowledgement. And it was, I don't want to say it's buried in the answer to something else about everybody getting along, but it's like, you know, it caught everybody's ear in the room. I think every reporter of like, well, there you go. There's, 58 didn't work, like you said.
Right. And it's, it's an afterthought 4 years from now. And, you know, what will we be saying 4 years from now about whatever budget reform is put in place on the, you know, if there is one as part of this final budget deal?
Well, we've talked about Mike Malines, the leader of the Assembly Republicans. So after the governor threw out his new August revision of a budget, Malines was asked by reporters about the way things were going and the governor's comment specifically about Republicans and taxes and being too stubborn. So with that being said,
you know, he has had a stubborn position for taxes, and we just disagree. We have a difference of opinion. We believe that will put the economy backwards. It'll extend a recession in California, which had happened last time under Pete Wilson. And frankly, it'll devastate working people. We have seniors who are on fixed incomes who this is a real hit to them. If you start talking about sales taxes, upper income taxes, move people out of the state, I think we have to meet in a compromise without taxes.
Are you pointing to me? Am I supposed to react? Well,
what do you think about that? What do you make of Valiant's comments?
Well, you know, I mean, I think I've said before, the justifications for taxes at all times, I mean, it depends on what's going on with the economy. I think Republicans clearly think, I mean, the more fiscal conservative Republicans feel there's never a good time to increase taxes. I mean, when times are bad, it's going to hurt the working people and drive businesses out of the state. And when times are good, it's time for a tax cut because it's not the government's money. It's the people's money. I mean, you know, the question I would be interested to see an analysis. In fact, this is something that we may be doing next week in Capital Weekly of a budget.
Read it online at
CapitalWeekly.net of a chart of budgets, government spending per person. Indexed for inflation, you know, as our population increases, obviously our budget has grown many times over the last, you know, decade or so. But I wonder, you know, if you chart that along with the population growth, whether the actual government spending has increased or not. It would be interesting to see. Perhaps it has, because I know the state has taken on a much greater responsibility on certain programs and getting a lot more block grants from the federal government, but that may be another podcast.
That's definitely another podcast.
But, you know, I'd heard speculation this morning. I mean, it's rumor season again in the Capitol. I was walking through the Capitol this morning, and there's speculation now. Well, there was speculation earlier that the Speaker, Karen Bass, and Mike Valiant were putting together some kind of proposal that would rely heavily on government borrowing. Now I'm hearing that the Senate may be kicking around some ideas that do not involve tax increases, that are all cuts and borrowing, you know, and this after Senate Leader Don Perata has said no borrowing.
And yet. The governor said he wouldn't do the borrowing when I asked him the question in the news conference.
Right.
Same thing, that he wouldn't support it.
So, you know, clearly something's got to give. I mean, there's no way out of this budget hole without some new revenues or some borrowing or some deep cuts or some combination.
Well, and of course, the dynamic that we continue to watch, and it's not the first year we've watched it, but the dynamic, again, driving a lot of things is the relationship of the governor with his fellow Republicans in the legislature. And far be it from us to try to weigh in on that. The person who I thought was the most interesting about it this week was the leader of the Democrats in the Senate, Don Perata.
They think he's a Democrat, and yet, you know, he's not obviously closed the deal with us. And so, you know, he's really out there on an ice floe by himself.
He's out there on an ice floe by himself, which makes me think of like a polar bear.
I was thinking of like an Inuit elder. Isn't that what they do? They send him out on an ice floe when they can no longer help the tribe. And they just...
Well. I think all of those are appropriate in this case.
Perhaps.
But Perata went on to say when he was talking to reporters about something in particular, and I just want to get this point out there too, which is this notion of the sales tax increase. Because one of the things that is the most difficult, I think, to get your head around with the governor saying, I want long-term reforms of the state budget problem, is this sales tax increase, as we alluded to in last week's podcast, is a three-year sales tax increase.
Right.
Three-year sales tax increase going up by a percentage. After that, not only does it go away, but the existing sales tax goes down by a quarter of a percent.
Right.
So it is, in effect, a tax cut. When you right. do the math, and the governor's own Department of Finance will show you the numbers, by the time the tax increase expires, the sales tax increase, it's bringing in about $5 billion a year. When you take it away and you take a small portion of the existing sales tax away, you get somewhere around a $6 billion loss in revenues that whoever is governor is going to have to face at that point. And when Perata was asked about the viability of that deal, he didn't seem very hot on it.
We're not going to run around and talk about a head fake on taxes. You give them a little bit for a few years and then you drop it a little bit later. That doesn't do anything except put the next governor and the governor after that in a very difficult position. The governor is going to have a bad enough time running the state in the next 2 years under the best of circumstances. This would simply make it a disaster.
Does that sound like somebody who would agree to that?
No, but I mean, let's see.
But stranger
budget fatigue. If budget fatigue fits in, I'm still waiting for the oddball. Like where's Steve Peace when you need him? You know, to come up with the triple flip to, you know, some sort of budget acrobatics to get us out of this mess. But
some kind of gimmickry.
Right, right.
But you were talking just a moment, just to wrap this point up quickly. You were talking about the chatter about borrowing. Are you hearing borrowing anything other than these pots of money that exist, local government or transportation or tobacco tax money or something like that?
Redevelopment funds. I mean, those are the, you know, those are the pots that I'm hearing. I mean, I don't know how that pencils out. I mean, I haven't seen anything concrete. It's just, you know, it's in the ether in and around the Capitol.
So as we look forward, the Democratic National Convention begins on Monday in Denver. Democrats don't seem like they're going. The speaker doesn't seem like she's going. Karen Bass.
Although the former speaker is. Well,
Fabian Nunez?
Yes, because
he's got a much lighter schedule these days. But Speaker Bass has indicated she wouldn't go. The governor said in his press conference, if there's still no budget by the time the Republican convention rolls around, he's been invited to speak on the first night of it, that he wouldn't go. But, I mean, I don't know. Do you think that's the case? These guys are political animals. They want to see this. And are you pouring your soft drink again? I hear it, the fizz.
Oh, you want some sound effects?
Sounds like static, but anyway.
But
what do you think? I mean, you think they really won't go?
Well, I know that that the speaker, Karen Bass, has a fundraiser planned in Denver for Tuesday. I mean, you know, make of that what you will. Whether or not she's going to attend, I guess, remains to be seen. This is something being organized in part by the California Democratic Party. And, you know, I'm going to Denver, budget or no budget. So I'll let you know if I see any members of our legislature there.
So we'll do the podcast next week with you as our correspondent on the floor.
Yeah, and it could be the Tattletale podcast. I can just rat out anybody who I see, you know, traipsing around the Mile High City.
Instead of here hard at work on the budget.
Right.
So last thoughts here quickly on the budget. Anything else that you're looking for? I mean, it's just kind of the ugliness that we've already described or what?
Yeah, and, you know, I mean, as we've talked about before, I mean, sometimes these apparent breakdowns are what's needed to get something kickstarted and maybe get some serious talks going again. You know, it does seem like there is a lot of movement. There is a lot of talk, which you know.
Wait a minute. You said there's a lot of movement?
Well, I mean, a lot of activity.
Oh, people moving around, not moving.
Right, from one office to the other, talking to each other.
Right.
Which, you know, before, I don't know, 7-8 days ago, it seemed like there was nothing going on. So at least they seem to be talking. They seem to be finally getting serious about getting some kind of deal, although we'll see who blinks first.
Well, and I was going to say, maybe we're going to get to a point here at least where some of the side parts don't become quite as important as the main issue. I mean, for example, one thing that kind of got put on a back burner officially this week was this notion of cutting the pay of state workers because a judge here in Sacramento County said, yes, I'll hear this case and we can hear the merits of it, but I'll hear it on September 12th.
Right.
Which means there are no pay cuts of state workers for August, which means even if you hear the case of the governor versus state controller John Chung on September 12th, there's probably not a ruling on the 12th where you see where I'm getting. You know, so in other words, these have all been kind of, I don't know, for lack of a better term, side acts in this budget impasse. And maybe now we're not going to spend as much time on those and get to the meat of it.
Although John Chung has parlayed this very nicely into a nice speaking slot on Monday at the Democratic National Convention.
Oh, so, has he?
Yeah. So as the man who's taken on Schwarzenegger, I mean, you know, this is a gift, a political gift from Schwarzenegger to Chung, allowing, you know, somebody who typically toils in obscurity as a state controller to sort of grab the limelight and be seen as standing up for the average, you know, the average state worker in the face of the big bad governor.
So Controller Chung's kind of a winner so far in that, right?
I think so far, and as much if there are any winners in this budget standoff politically, I think John Chung.
Are there any other winners?
No, I mean,
no, seriously, yeah.
Not that I can see. I mean, you know, there are people rallying on the front steps of the Capitol today. I mean, talking about health care cuts. You know, the school year starting, there's going to be another round of very real impacts of this prolonged budget standoff. Rural counties are particularly concerned. There's a story in Capital Weekly this week about how the standoff and a potential solution could impact rural counties who may get hit hardest as part of any solution. So no, I can't think of any other winners. I mean, I think Chung gets a couple of political points, but outside of that, it's hard to see anybody getting any real benefit.
Well, from winners and losers to left and right, that's my transition here. You like that?
That's good.
Winners
That's
nice. And losers to left to right. That's...
back and forth.
That's why they pay me the big public radio bucks.
Yes.
So Anthony's publication, Capital Weekly, which out on the stands now and online at capitalweekly.net. That's two plugs, by the way.
And online, we fixed the typos of the print version, so, you know, it's pretty good.
you have a bit of a revisionist history there. But this week you've got your, what is it, your second annual?
Second annual. And then we can actually say annual because first annual is, I guess, technically, grammatically incorrect, according to the Lords of AP style.
So your annual legislative scorecard where you throw a whole bunch of things into the meat grinder and out comes a liberal or conservative tag for members of the legislature, right?
Right. And it's an approximation and an abbreviation. Admittedly, these scorecards are not perfect. And we say as much in the introduction to the scorecard. Pick 20 bills that came up for votes on the Senate and Assembly floor. The same bills when possible, but some, you know, we're not at the end of the two-year session yet. So not all the bills and not all the bills make it to the floors of both houses. But we tried to pick some bills that would sort of shed some light on the ideological impulses of the 120 legislators. And I think, you know, while imperfect, I think that there are some real trends and notable trends that reflect a lot of what I think us Capitol watchers and those of us who live and breathe this stuff every day, some of the truths that we believe, I think, were confirmed in this scorecard.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say, because when I looked at it, I mean, it validated the notion of who seems to be more conservative, who's more liberal, who's a more moderate Republican, who's a more conservative Democrat. I mean, it really did.
Right, which we didn't know that going in, you know, but I think that's probably an indicator that we chose some pretty good bills to evaluate. So, you know.
So who's who?
Well, what was telling to me, one of the things that was telling was that all four leaders and Daryl Steinberg, the Senate pro tem
elected Thursday.
Thursday. Right.
You're not good on that whole embargoed thing,
no,
are you?
No, because I tell it as I see it. I tell it how it really is, or like that.
Tell on, please.
but that all five of these legislative leaders scored perfect conservative or liberal scores. They all scored a zero or a 100 in our scoring system.
Which explains part of our problem in terms of getting things done.
Perhaps it does. And you look at the very few number of moderates, in both caucuses. Not only did, there were, a couple dozen perfect scores, but then those that weren't perfect, they're within 10 votes or 10 points, on a 100-point scale of the most conservative extreme or the most liberal. And I think that, and there are very few centrists. A handful of people, literally, you can probably count them on two hands.
Were there more centrists the last time you did it or not?
No, well, it's the same crew, so it's the same two-year session.
If we had done the session before, though, I think there's a lot of theory that there might have been a few more moderates. Not a lot.
Well, I think a few more moderates in the Assembly, and I think there are probably more moderates now in the Senate than there were before. So, and that's been reflected in terms of some of the bills that have moved through the legislature. A lot of stuff has passed through the Assembly and been killed either in Senate committees or on the Senate floor because the Senate has become more moderate than the Assembly. And I think we'll continue to see that next year with the election of Rod Wright, a conservative or moderate Democrat from Los Angeles, taking over for Ed Vincent, who scored a 100 on our liberal scale, Senator from Englewood, who is being termed out of office.
So, off the top of your head, since you don't have a copy of your lovely newspaper in front of you, do you happen to remember who might be at the big ends of the spectrum there?
I remember Elaine Ahlquist. Because we pulled a few out for photos. Received a perfect 100 liberal score. Mark White. I think there were three senators. Or four senators who got a perfect conservative score.
Mark Weiland, a state senator from Southern California, Republican
from San Diego, San Diego area. And then there were
was deemed as one of the more conservative. Just to finish the thought,
and I believe there were 10 perfect liberal scores on the Senate side, and a couple, maybe 18 or so perfect liberals on the assembly side and six or seven perfect conservatives on the I wish I had it in front of me.
But. We encourage people to go online and look it up.
There's no room for a paper with my cool, refreshing soft drink here. So
the studio is very small. The space is limited.
Right. Yes. Close quarters. Public radio, please, send money now. We'll send you a tote bag.
Space is limited, and thankfully, time is limited.
Oh, nice.
And we have now come to the end of our allotted time. We have wasted our podcast listeners' time enough for this week. Right?
Yes, all hundreds of them, I'm now convinced.
Hundreds. I wish there were hundreds. Okay, so Anthony's going to the Democratic Convention next week, and hopefully will be checking with us by phone so we can get a slice of Denver if all the politicians here in Sacramento aren't able to get it. They could listen to Anthony's.
Oh, I'll be back. I'll be back on Thursday, so I'll be back in studio.
I wanted it from Denver.
Well, call me Wednesday.
All right, we'll check in with him then. And if there's budget news, unfortunately, we'll probably be back here in the old podcast cave. For Anthony York from Capital Weekly, I'm John Myers from KQED. We'll see you next time.